You are tuned to another episode of the Such a Garden podcast. This episode, I'll eventually get there, is brought to you thanks to CD Stone. Big thanks to Giles and the crew at home. I'll play the intro jingle in just a second, but this is a little bit of a treat, I promise you. I've been after this one for a while. I'll play the jingle, we get there in a second.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden podcast.
It's an absolute pleasure, to have this gentleman on the show again, with thanks to CD Stone for everything they've done and making this impossible. It came about because I was standing at Sarah from Oxford Planters trade stand, and then I went for a wee little walk while she went to get a sandwich, and I bumped into another good friend, Gillian Goodson, and they said, who are you going to interview next? And I said, I don't know. And she went, oh, we should ask David Harbour. And I went, the David Harbour. The David, you're now the David. David, how are you?
I'm the David. I'm here at Chelsea. I'm going to be completely honest, I'm knackered. I'm absolutely knackered. It's the show's been 3 weeks in the build. This is day one of the press day, and it's just an exhausting ride. It's a roller coaster. So there's the emotion, the elation, the hard work, the standing up to your knees in freezing cold water. I'm good. Other than that, I'm good. I'm delighted with the end result, and we're getting lots of nice feedback. But it's a funny old business, Chelsea.
I think show gardening in itself, as I discussed with Kate Gold and Sherry Carman, to name but a few, I think you have to be slightly, I say this very eloquently, David, my apologies, but I think you have to be slightly imbalanced to turn around and say, the imaginary people in my head have said we should do this.
It's a, yeah, all right. It's a sort of masochism. I didn't design the garden. We were lucky enough to have Andrew Duff from the Inchbold School of Design design it. Savills and I are basically the sponsors, and I put my sculpture, signature piece in the middle. I think if I'd sponsored it and they hadn't put my signature piece of sculpture in, there would have been a few questions raised as to why am I paying all this money. At the end of the day, the designers and the guys who build it are the heroes. I mean, it's just, building this incredible venture in 3 weeks. And I was standing up to my knees in freezing cold water, and I was getting muddy hands and getting back to my home at midnight. But nothing compared to what they are up to. But you're right, it is masochistic. However, at the end of a show, people say never again, and they're exhausted, and they say, that's it, I'm taking time out. And you see them back there. They're back. It's a drug. It's an absolute drug.
I compared show gardening to being on stage with Led Zeppelin, and then somebody flicks the light switch, and you wake up and you're actually wearing a pair of, I don't know, Spider-Man pyjamas, sitting in your living room watching the A-Team on TV, and it's 1983, and you go, no, I want to go back. Why? I don't want another cup of tea. I want to dive off the stage and have all that again. I know I jest in saying that, and I may make it sound a little bit comical, but I'm not far off the mark in that from my experiences and from everybody else that I've spoke to.
Yeah, I mean, I've done 25 years of Chelsea.
Wow.
And two show gardens and 23 years of trade stands. And our trade stands, I don't know if you've seen them in the past, we invest such a lot in them that we ended up getting the best trade stand year on year. And we were judged as show gardens, which is how we were allowed to cross the tarmac of Main Avenue, like crossing the Styx. And we became, we're now doing show gardens. As I said, it's an adrenaline rush. It's an addiction. I don't think people are doing it for the ego. It's not a pop star thing. It's, there are egos at play, but actually the gardening world's quite quite sane in that way. But what it is an opportunity to excel, and it's an opportunity to really be the very best. Chelsea is head, and I do sculptures and installations all over the world. France, America, the Far East, the Middle East, they all try and do flower shows, and they all know that they are at the very best 20 or 30% of Chelsea. They acknowledge it grudgingly that this is so far ahead of everybody else that it's in a class of its own.
I've got a good friend of mine, a gentleman by the name of Tim Hell, when he finds out that you're on the show, I know he's going to pop out at least 4 photographs of gardens that you've done. His, or my favourite one, was it the one that you did last year with the big yellow...
Yeah.
I say this very eloquently, and apologies, David, I know you're sitting beside me, but for those of you listening at home, press the middle button in your phone right now, you can do that. This will keep playing. And just Google David Harbour Sculpts Chelsea, and it will come up for you. I showed that to my daughter, who is a little bit of a, I say a daydreamer, like her dad, entirely practical on one hand, but then entirely imbalanced maybe on the other is a good way to put it, or understands why imaginary people are still real and valid and hugely important, even as a grown-up to this day. Let's move on from me. But that one, I showed it to her.
Blown away.
Oh, I mean, I was blown away, but the fact that this grown-up kid got it and the little not-grown-up kid got it was just unbelievably magical in every childlike sense of the world. Yeah. And I'm getting to you in a second, but the point I made about it when I, analysed it as gardens can be, having been wooed or drawn to it, first of all, which is the primary thing. The second thing then is when you take what I do for a living, you break it down and you start to say, does it look out of context? As in, when I walked into my sister's living room, did I like her lampshade or just a suite of furniture, or was it a home, was it a room? Your sculpt didn't look out of place in the garden. I'll bite at Sean straight away. True. And I can't find enough words to describe how utterly amazing that was.
Well, yes, you're very kind. It was the first big bronze casting I'd ever done. Up until then, I've just been bending and forging and bending metal. But this was cast, which meant I was liberated to make a shape. The whole story of that garden, which was a brilliant success. We did that on a complete shoestring. I mean, I don't know if you know the kind of budgets that some of these Chelsea gardens have, but we did that on an absolute shoestring. But it didn't really show. We had, we created these layers. It was like a theatre. But the focal point right at the back was this big 2.5-ton bronze, in the middle of which was this starburst, like a piece of pollen under a microscope, or an allium, at its moment of most incredible radiance. And it was relatively inexpensive. It was cast aluminium covered in 23-karat gold. And we were taken by surprise. We were literally, we created it, we took it outside the workshop, and even the guys in the workshop just stood with their jaws dropped when the sun hit it. We hadn't expected that, you know, that radiance that came out of it. It was everything I do is a bit of luck, I've got an inkling of what I'm trying to do, and then luck takes over.
You say luck, I say class act. What is, however, unbelievable is if I take something that I should add, I know very little about to an extent, but I was reared with my 4 sisters, and so I know a little. I say a little, bear with me, I'll get there. If you show me the most elegant, for example, let's say wedding dress in the planet, big, huge, trailing, everything is magnificent or grand, maybe is a better word for it. And sometimes you take what I can only describe as a little bit of a Timotei advert, and the girl is in a very simple white dress, and nobody looks at her or that person in that dress and says, that was only 120 quid's worth of material.
Yeah.
And they look at it and say, that is just elegant. Stunning. Elegant is the perfect word. Something my mom had when she went out. But you certainly had that. The point I make is I never looked at your garden and thought, you must have done that in a shoestring. But he did very well. It was a nice accomplishment. Well, well done, David. It really was everything that was elegant and wonderful and beautiful. Now, the more you explain a little bit behind the curtains, the more I'm saying they're all of the things I never do. You can tell me no, and I'll accept that, and I'll ask you a different question. But I'm aware, and the listeners would be aware, of some of the big budgets that are operated on here. What is a Chelsea shoestring?
I think a Chelsea shoestring, well, last year I think we did it for about 130,000. It's a decent shoestring, but you gobble up an enormous amount of that just in logistics. I mean, you put 10, 20 people in London for 2 or 3 weeks. If you're accommodating them, that alone is a fortune. And much as I'd much rather be buying a pint of Guinness somewhere in Ireland, they're not cheap in London, I can tell you.
No.
You've got 20 thirsty blokes at the end of a day and you've got to buy them a couple of rounds. That's half your budget gone.
Well, I'll put that in context for those of you who don't live in London and maybe Salt Lake City. I bought two gin and tonics and a bottle of beer yesterday in a hotel near Battersea Park. We leave that one there. And it was 33 quid.
Yeah.
You'd get arrested back home for that.
Well, it's one good way of giving up drinking, isn't it? Well, certainly you're going to walk home because you can't afford a taxi.
You're at a point where you take a piece of art, you create a piece of art, you create a picture in your head. You then allow, I say allow, I use this word, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, but you allow somebody then to take that piece and they have an option, which is the designer can say, well, I'll excel, in which case the piece is left a little bit behind. We're back to maybe the living room thing again, or the piece excels and the garden becomes backdrop. You to an extent, have to put your trust a little bit in somebody else, but you need that to be almost like a marriage in creating this garden. Is that a fair way to explain that?
Absolutely. I mean, technically, Savills and I are the sponsors. Savills and David Harbour are sponsoring the garden. So we choose a garden designer who is going to meet the brief. And the brief is create a venue with the story that fits with the message that we're trying to share. But do it, you know, we want it to be... I'm too old to work with people that I don't enjoy working with. I'm too old to have to kind of renegotiate something halfway through. And I'm also too old to be disappointed. So you've got to choose your partners well. I'm too old to hide my disappointment. You know, it's probably a better way of putting it. Yeah. But the reality is, and Andrew Duff is an exceptionally talented garden designer. And you can tell if you're going to get on with somebody. And you can tell if he's sympathetic to... I did a scribble on a piece of paper on day two of our relationship. And I said... that's it. And he said, yes, I completely get it. I understand it. And he remembered it. And he built the garden with that in mind. And it was a 1.5 second scribble. Should have charged for it by the minute, shouldn't
I? I'm reminded of the story that Paul McCartney told. What was it? No, I think he told Oprah Winfrey the story. And I remember seeing it years ago. I was still in primary school at the time. And she said, you know, you had the option to buy all the rights for the Beatles songs back. And he said, well, he said, you have to appreciate, he said, we were probably a bit, I don't want to misquote his words, but it was late in the evening, we were in a bar in Hamburg and we wrote them on the back of a fag packet. And now you want us to pay 60 or 80 million to buy that back. Yeah. And I thought it was pretty wonderful. But in that, David, I don't mean to sound clever here. I'll buy them May. It's not my intention. But you, to me, are sort of up there on a little bit of a plateau. There's nobody really touching you. The gardens that you have done and trade stands, they're not trade stands, they're gardens, but not judged as. Yeah. The judging is mildly different, but they're still judged. I could turn around and say you don't need to do this, but you do it. And maybe we're back to that whole drug thing all over again and stage diving.
No, it's not that. It's not the... I'm not doing it for the grand gesture of doing a Chelsea show garden. So just to wind the clock back a bit, yeah. I had a very checkered career, left school when I was quite young, very young, under a bit of a cloud, you know, just scraped through a few O-levels. I was a Thatcher, a potter, a rock climbing instructor. I did a bit of BBC camera work for mountaineering. I ran a travelling theatre on a boat around Europe, you know, the usual career path. I then started making sundials, which we evolved into sculpture. I still see my job as making pieces for people. So I'm creating bits of work, artwork for people. If I'd gone to art college, I would have probably come out and said, I'm a sculptor. Therefore, my piece is worth £10,000, £20,000, £50,000. I'm still somebody who sees what I do as almost providing a service. I've got to make something that is as good as I can do, that's going to beguile and entertain and amuse and be glorious to the observer, my client. My client deserves the best I can do. So there, I can't have an ego. I've got to be just doing the best I can for somebody else. And that's a legacy of when I started out all those years ago making something and being completely gobsmacked that somebody would pay me for it at the end of the day. And I'm still grateful. Every time somebody buys one of my pieces, it's feeding a bigger machine. It's feeding, you know, the staff and the workshop and the marketing and a modest lifestyle, I hasten to add. But it's I'm still surprised that people are prepared to put their hand in their pocket for one of my pieces. Overjoyed, delighted, but I don't take it for granted.
What was the very first piece that you made, one? And two, what was the very first piece that you made that sold?
They're one and the same, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a nice story. And having sold my theatre boat, which I'd been travelling around Europe with for ages, I was living in a little rented cottage in Oxfordshire. I was down to my last 50 quid, therefore completely broke by anybody's standards. And I didn't have enough money to pay for the rent due on the cottage. So I was down on my luck. I had a 2-year-old daughter that I was looking after. And the end result was a friend turned up from France, showed me a sundial that he'd bought at an antiques fair in France. And he was going to sell it in the UK and make a handsome profit. And I was a man obsessed. He left. I gave him a cup of coffee and he went on his way. And by the end of the day, I'd been to the Museum of the History of Science. I bought some books, I bought some metal, and I started making one. And at the literally 5 days later, it was finished. I was down to then 20 quid, 2-year-old daughter, couldn't pay the rent on my house. And as luck would have it, the very charming actor Jeremy Irons, who lives relatively near to me, had seen it and basically said, "Is it for sale?" and was good enough to buy it, get me out of a hole. And I think the most important thing was he with some very encouraging words, said, "You are onto something here. You know, it's a great thing. Make another one. You know, you've got something." I could have just forgotten about it. If he'd not bought it, I probably never would have made another piece. I'd have then gone and worked in a supermarket or whatever.
Wow.
But luckily, he saw it, liked it, bought it, and got me out of a hole and set us off on a path.
I take the point where if you ask me how I ended up in France, if you ask me how I met Ed Burnham, if you ask me how I ended up in Cardiff, not to make the show about Peter, but I think I've got a pathway in my head where I would like to go. And sometimes when I look back on it, it's actually, well, if I hadn't met him when I was 16, if I hadn't bumped into his friend when I was 32,
Yep. It's
a sort of a series of sliding doors. Sometimes they become a one-off. What was the second piece that sold that made you turn around and go, well, actually, Jeremy's right?
Yeah, it was probably a similar piece because I wasn't being particularly imaginative. I was copying an ancient Greek 2,000-year-old design, which just happened to be a really nice marriage of art and science. And it was it looked technically quite intricate, but it was actually very basic and simple to make. So I made one of those, and I forget who I sold that to now. I think it might have been a wealthy banker from the Henley area where I was then working. And these were so bad, I promise you. I went back to the first 5 clients I'd ever sold them to about 2 or 3 years later and said, "You may be happy with it, but I'm not. And can I please make you another one and swap it out?" Because my quality had improved and I was embarrassed by the quality of the originals.
Okay, well, because you strike me as a fellow who doesn't sit still for too long. A trait that my mom would have suggested that I had a lot. Not a bad thing, just meant to get into trouble in school a little bit, or when children should have not been heard nor seen at all, if you remember those days. What's next for David Harbour?
Quite a timely question, actually. It is Monday at Chelsea Flower Show. Tuesday is the awards, the medals. We'll see where we get. The show goes on for 4 days. I actually have to catch a plane on Tuesday night to New York because we're opening a roof terrace show garden of my sculpture in New York. I'll be back on Thursday. So, as you said, don't let the grass grow under your feet. I am of an age where I'd quite like to let the grass grow under my feet. And it's ironic that the garden we're sitting in here was designed specifically to allow people to unwind, forget the busy hurly-burly of the world around them, relax, and just let nature do some therapeutic magic. But I'm going to be jumping on a plane and going to New York.
What's the next couple of years for you? Will you do Chelsea again next year?
Well, we'll do Chelsea for sure. We've done it for 25 years and it's in our blood. It's in our DNA now. Whether it's a trade stand where we will do an extensive garden to show off our sculptures, or whether we'll do a show garden again, that's to be decided. My wife, Sophie, is the power behind the David Harbour Empire. Mm-hmm. I think if I'd been left to my own devices, I'd be in a shed with maybe one person helping. As it stands, we're 35 with, you know, as a new showroom in New York, a workshop here in Oxfordshire, and a show garden in Eaton Square in London. So, and a presence on Main Avenue, you know, one of the big five show gardens on the biggest, most prestigious show, Chelsea Flower Show, in the world. So she's the power. So what's next? Renovating a beautiful mill house, making a sculpture park of my own. And as my daughters, I have four, have said, you know, just take a bit of time to enjoy the now, you know.
There's a double question here, hence my hesitancy. But do you allow yourself time to allow the grass to grow under your feet, bearing in mind the previous question, which was, do you find it hard to sit still? I'll bite with encouragement from the daughters, who I also don't want to get into trouble with, because I have four sisters of my own.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in a house of females. We're running with the buzz, you know, with the success. There is success now with what we're doing. People like what we do. They acknowledge that what we're doing is of quality and of merit. So it doesn't seem the right moment to start taking your foot off the gas. I get a buzz out of every new thing we make. I get a buzz out of it being made efficiently. I get a buzz out of it being made, you know, profitably. But the most important thing is I get a real buzz out of meeting a client, coming up with a concept, them getting it, and then us making it, delivering it, and then being, you know, more than delighted. That seems to be the thing that drives me. You know, have I managed to make somebody else want me and want what I make? And that's the buzz. So the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I am of an age where I should be slowing down. In the good old days, people retired by my age, but unfortunately, four daughters and a wife with a vision and renovating a house, that's not on the horizon at the moment.
How long is David Harbour in the business of David Harbour Inc. now? Because I know the ladies are behind the scenes. One. Two, what was the day when you turned around and went, honey, we've made it?
It's very tricky, that. You never know. You never know when you've actually made it. You know, and I'm staggered by people know who I am. I mean, here we are at Chelsea. Yes, they should know because they've been here 25 years. Yes, they should know because we've got our name above the garden. And yes, we should know because we've been here and people expect to see us. But I still find it amazing that we work in this little bubble in Oxfordshire creating our pieces. When did I think we'd made it? Probably when we got onto Main Avenue at Chelsea. I'd been here probably 12 years doing show gardens in different places and making money. And when you can afford to go on holiday without borrowing the money from your brother.
That's a very good answer.
Yeah.
That's a very good answer.
And these are modest holidays, I have to say, you know.
I remember being in college. I came home and met a friend of mine, Derek. We walked into the bar. We put all of the coins that we had on the counter. And I said to the guy, Mark, still remember him, that's all I have. I'm afraid to count it. Do we have enough for 2 pints? We made them last. And just when we were getting to the last drop of it, he walked over with 2 pints and said, these two are on the house. And I thought, that's a good day and a bad day, but a better day, all rolled into one.
Yeah.
I remember telling my mom, and my mom said, never forget that one. It's very easy to forget where you came from. You noted that at the very start of this conversation about, well, you worded it as I'm too old to not show my disappointment, but did you have moments like where it was a good day and a bad day and you don't need a 20 quid? But that's sort of a reminder of, I don't want to go back to that.
No, no one would want to go back to the uncertainty and the anxiety of that. I mean, it's... you know, I think when you're young, you can toss a, I mean, I've changed career, as I mentioned, umpteen times. Not because I had to, not because I would, but just because I got bored and I thought something else will come up. I never left one thing to do another. I just left one thing and thought something else will turn up. You know, when you're down on your luck, as long as you, any decisions you make with integrity, and any decisions you make, you know, for the right reasons, something good will come up. Be a good person, you know, be honourable, be honest, and good things happen, you know. Just by meeting people, by bumping into people, by having somebody as nice as Jeremy Irons get you out of a hole. He didn't know he was doing that. He does now because I've mentioned it more times than I can remember. But only because it's a really nice story, you know, that you can be... I mean, what would happen... let's say I didn't make that sundial. Let's say I did, but he didn't see it. Let's say, you know, he didn't want to buy it. I was literally a week away from having to sleep in the car with my daughter. And that's, you know, that's kind of tough to even remember that that was a possibility.
I remember listening to a story from, I don't watch television because mine is disconnected, as most of you would know, but it was Mrs. Brown's Boys, and Winnie, I think her name is in the programme, but I'm unsure, television show for you listening in the States that was shown on BBC originally in Ireland, and it wasn't having much luck there that I remember. Somebody can correct me on that one. And they'd won awards. And her radio interview was at the time of sitting on the Graham Norton show, having won those awards. She was still sleeping in her car whilst renting out her house because she couldn't afford the mortgage on it. I admired the fact that she told a story, because in this case, in your case, in my case, you might note that you've mentioned the Jeremy Irons thing a couple of times. But we, as garden designers, or as people who have an involvement in making outdoor spaces new, vibrant, sexy, beautiful pieces of art, and that big arm wrapped around it that is of photosynthetic nature, you could have done maybe the artist thing and put the curtains down and said, well, for I am David Harbour and I am amazing. And Let me tell you amazing things about David Harbour.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, smoke and mirrors, it's very, very dangerous to start becoming something. If you start... hiding your true personality, or stop inventing a personality, or becoming something else, I think it's terribly dangerous, because you who are you in the end? I mean, I'm the guy, I'm still 22 years old in my head. Yeah. I'm still rock climbing down in South Devon. I'm still, you know, working out whether we've got enough money, as you said, for a pint of beer at the end of the day, but happy to have a chance to have a crack at anything, you know, to have a go at it, enjoy it. I mean, I ended up doing a theatre boat in France. Who does that? I went to Rotterdam, saw a boat that I could afford. It was £2,500. It's not a lot of money for 160 tons of you know, ship. Know nothing about boats, know nothing about theatre, know nothing about metalwork, certainly know nothing about navigating it. And having bought this thing with my sort of 2 years' savings with my girlfriend, we were then told we had to move it. And it was like, oh, now how are we going to do that? We've got to navigate it down to France and spend a year cutting it to pieces and turning it into a theatre. Why did we do that? Just for fun, because we thought it'd be a good crack. we had a great time. Cruising around France and Europe on a boat with half a dozen actors and actresses playing weird Shakespeare to the French in Japanese, and all sorts of everything under the sun happened.
There was a pause there because David was smiling and I was smiling back at him, because it was just the imagination in me is running wild. I'd like to say a big thanks to CD. It's funny how you bump into people and say, well, this guy is David and this guy is Giles. And so two gentlemen, and Gillian and Sarah and CD Stone, have made this one all possible, and I really am very grateful for the conversation.
I've just got a butt in there. Sorry, not butt in, interject. I've used CD for decades, 20 years ago when we were starting out, and I mean, I'm a metal worker effectively, but when we started using stone, they were the go-to place, and they've stood by us for all these years. I'm sure they've grown, we've grown, we probably, you know, we bump into each other, but we still, I tell my people, you know, go to CED. If they haven't got it, they'll tell you where to get it. They were phenomenally helpful 20 odd years ago with me.
Well, there you go. That was an unplanned one. There's Toby Buckland. He's a former guest of the show. Oh, another Arsenal fan. Yeah. I'll talk to you later, Toby. But that's it. I was supposed to do the outro with David Harbour. An absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that.
Thanks, and have a good rest of the show.
Julius and home. Thanks very much. Safe home. God bless. Bye-bye.